base charge at 52%, what does that get us? And I don't, there was some process we went through with the board and the public meetings to figure out what percentage to use there. So I don't recall the entire process of getting there, but basically we said, okay, let's pick 52%, and that means their base charge is 58.81, and that seems like a more reasonable number. And then, okay, well, what usage rate do we need to use to still try and get close to that contribution down here at the bottom that should be $1.5 million? And so that was the kind of, it's a balancing act, and it's, you know, you have to go back and forth and figure out what's reasonable, what's appropriate, what is the board willing to accept. And so, anyway, this is how the 5% per year was just a way, Don, to try and get from negative 575 to one to zero.
Okay.
That was the goal. So, but it is a decision made by the board. There's not any rule.
But my question is, yeah, why 10% for the irrigation,
right,
versus the 5%?
So I'll get there. Okay. I'll get there. Sorry. It's a long story. I'm sorry. I give you the short answer, I'm afraid I'll miss the nuances of it.
Can I just ask a quick question? Why the 52 and 21 versus 35 for everybody?
Okay. So what we did, we did that, and we had everybody was different. Because 50%, if you did 52 for everybody, or 35 for everybody, whatever, you would have, and I think we probably start with 35 for everybody, and then your base charge will be different for 5/8, 3/4, 1 inch, right? And then your 1 inch customer base charge will be significantly more than the 5/8 inch customers. And when we dug deeper into that, we realized most of the people with 1 inch meters are residential customers, and their usage patterns fall the same as the 3/4 and 5/8 inch people as well. And the only reason they had 1 inch was because they had fire sprinklers. And we decided that was not equitable to charge, to kind of penalize the people that had to have fire sprinklers in the house. And that necessitated the 1 inch meter size, even though they don't use any more water than 3/4 of the 5/8 inch people. So that was the difference. And so we averaged those three. And I think it looks like we just picked 3/4 inch rate and apply that to the 1 inch and the 5/8 inch. Mm-hmm. So that was the process that went through, and I'm probably missing some of the details on it, but basically we wanted to set 5/8, 3/4, and 1 inch all the same, because we recognized all those customers were basically the same customers. Their usage patterns did not differ, and so it wasn't equitable to charge them different base charges. So the percentage just ended up that way. We picked the number on those three. We picked, the 3/4 inch was calculated, and then we assigned that one to the 5/8 and the 1 inch. So, to keep them all fair. Okay, so that's how we did it for treated. And the reason I want to bring this up first, Don, is because the irrigation side, it's important to understand that bottom line down here, and that there's a target number we're aiming for that makes this zero. And so we're looking to try and get this row here from no to yes. And so that was what they did. So let me, where was the irrigation? I think it's after that. I'm going to show you the same one for irrigation. So here's the same one for irrigation. And you can see that same column, or the same row down here, net gain, you're negative 254 at the beginning. And basically what they did was we tried to set this first year to contributions reserve to zero. And we wanted to make sure the irrigation customers, per the model, were paying their fair share of operating costs. And so, really want them to pay their fair share of capital costs too, because we have a lot of ditches to repair and maintain, and we want to line a bunch of the ditches, right, that are leaking. So we want to get to the point where they're contributing their fair share to capital reserves. But when we looked at it, we realized we can't do that in 1 year. And so, but we recognize that we really wanted to get them to cover their fair share of operating in the first year, and then we could ratchet them up over time to start contributing towards capital costs. So the first year we just picked it to make operating zero. The 10% number was just picked to try and get them to the 253, 456 in that last row. That's the target contribution we're trying to get them to every year. So we're trying to get to that number within a certain time frame. And the board, I can't remember the exact time frame we picked for that one, Don, to be honest, but It was something like 10, 15 years. I'd have to look at it again. I don't remember. But the process, we presented the board one option, and they said, we'll spread things out. We can't do that in 5 years. And so we spread it out. I think it was 10.
Yeah, it was 10.
I think it was 10.
Dave Halpin's
suggestion. Yeah, I think it was 10. We spread it out to 10, and then to try and get them to 253, 465 in 10 years. And that's how we ended up with 10%, was just trying to get to that in 10 years.
It kind of implies that the irrigation customers like myself were getting a much better deal on water than, you know, the treated folks were. And that just has had even a longer time where there hasn't been a regular increase that should have been going on. But I think the other thing, I don't know if was it factoring in, because you're doing it by miner's inches there too, but the cost of delivery of that includes how much water we're actually using every year for those customers, right?
Right.
So it's a large volume of water.
Right.
A lot of it's waste that goes into that we're losing every year, essentially, but there's an expense to that, and you got to cover that expense somewhere. It's a tremendous amount of waste.
Right. I don't want to get too into it, because it's there is an allocation of all these different costs that district has across the customer classes, and it goes in great detail in the rates of how that was done, and a lot of them are allocated based on the volume of water delivered, because the irrigation customers use, I think it's like 70%, two-thirds, 70-75%, in that range. I'd say 70, because right there, 70% of the water goes to irrigation, and you know, there's 400 irrigation customers, and then the other 30% goes to the 3,600 treated water customers.
Yep.
So, but the volume is a critical component of the rate study and how it was calculated. That's exactly right.
Haven't we lost 60 customers on irrigation?
66 inches.
Yeah, we can get onto that. I know it's a really long way, but I think it's important you guys understand all this, because most of you weren't around when we went through this.
Right.
I mean, look around here.
This is good because we're going to be getting into rate study again. We got to get some understanding of that as we move into that.
Oh, yeah, and this is a really complex model that was put together to calculate the rates and the 5-year structure. And I think you guys need to try and understand it.
Own from an intellectual property perspective the actual spreadsheets that
we
use for this, or
no.
It's just the PDF outputs?
This is it. We own the report. That's all we get.
Interesting. Okay.
No, it's proprietary. Yeah, we can't have that.
I mean, you can reverse engineer it, I guess.
Don't ask me to do that.
No. One of us Excel gurus could probably work.
But wasn't the rates based on the expenses and not the volume? I believe that you actually, irrigation went by 29%.
Yeah, there's different, again, there were different
expenses.
There were different different categories of expenses were split differently based on the benefit received by each customer class. And so some was benefit was calculated based on volume, some was calculated based on number of customers.
It
was not straight across. Yeah, each department was handled differently. It's in the report if anybody wants to read it.
Okay.
So that's how we got here. Let me try and change my thoughts again here. So that's the increase for irrigation. These slides probably aren't super important to you guys. This is from the same thing I just provided to the board. This chart, I won't cover it too much detail. It just shows what, like Director RCA was saying, is there was a rate structure that was recommended by RCAC the board did not adopt, and we were instructed to make some changes to change that structure that resulted in spreading the assuming things would last 5 to 10 years longer than we initially projected in the rate study. And so the rates that were adopted were less than what they recommended. So just about one, the range is at the bottom of this table. They were about $1.1 million less in year one and $1.5 million less in year five. I just want to point that out. It gets glossed over a lot that there was a process that went through with this rate study, and the recommendations of the consultant were actually much higher than what the board ultimately adopted. And so there was a lot of thought and effort that went into trying to try and keep these things reasonable.
That reasonableness created a risk of shortfalls potentially, assuming we were executing on what was
going on. Now, of course, with interest being higher, changes in customers, how we've been spending on capital improvement, all that stuff changes what the actuals are going to be. So we may end up being totally fine. But this is stating that we were taking a risk.
There is, but remember, that rate study was based on a capital replacement program. Wasn't based on a capital improvement plan. Wasn't based on a set given amount of projects or numbers of projects or cost of projects or time to build projects. It was based on our entire inventory asset list of the district and a what the general manager referred to as a capital replacement program. So these dollars, you have to remember, were based on replacing all the assets in the district in that capital replacement program.
That is correct. It was over. It calculated a replacement schedule for everything we have and said and assumed some grant funding and some loan funding and some financing costs, and it's all in there. And if you want to look at the giant spreadsheet,
so if you wrap
and so rather than do it,
it's assuming it, replacement over a period of time.
Well, in addition to maintenance, yeah. Even if you maintain something, it's yeah. going to eventually have to be replaced. So there's assumed asset lives in there, and then there's costs to replace that are based on different studies, and some are assumed and some are based on actual costs.
So that could have been played.
So it. Yeah, I mean it's the best available information at the time when we put the report together.
As long as you understand the assumptions,
yeah.
Right.
And you can make decisions like that.
And the idea is to put you're putting aside enough to replace things as they
yeah.
as you need to.
So this was a great place to start for the district, since they haven't had a rate increase in an umpteen number of years
yeah.
based on a failing infrastructure that needs a lot of TLC. Mm-hmm. But we also have to keep in mind that this rate increase was for 5 years. And we have limited amount of staff and contracts and time to build projects within 5 years of this 218 time frame before we start looking at another 218. So we have to keep this in mind with our rate increase and make sure that we're aware that these numbers are based on replacing every piece of equipment in the district. So we have to scale it down to a realistic amount.
Well, not in that 5 years.
And then look in that budget.
Yeah.
Correct, because you're not going to. There's no way that you're going to get this much money, and there's no way you'd have enough time, or talent, or contracts to replace everything in the district in 5 years. Right. So you have to scale it down and be realistic.
Years.
That's why we're relying on the general manager's budgets and his CIP, because it scales it down for us.
The plan wasn't to, or this rate review wasn't. Suggesting that everything gets replaced in 5 years.
Those actual numbers were
based on that.
The actual numbers are based on that. So just kind of keep that in mind. We have to scale it down to be rational and practical for what we really can do within a CIP and within a reasonable fiscal year budget.
Yeah, but it wasn't saying,
right?
You know, we're taking, here's all of our assets and the replacement value of all those things, and we're going to build into this rate study that you're going to pay for that again in 5 years' time. It took assumed some level of replacement, not all of it.
Well, I think what I'm trying to get everybody to understand is if these numbers, those projected numbers, were based on the entire replacement of an asset program, a capital asset program, capital replacement program, what I'm trying to get everybody to realize is that that's not realistically practical with what we've been up against since it went into effect 3 years ago. So when it went into effect 3 years ago, and the rates, because it was our first rate increase in umpteen number of years, and it jumped up so high, now, for the last couple of years, we've been realistically looking at, should we freeze the rates or not? Do we need a rate increase or not? So that's what I mean by we've scaled it down to be realistic to what the general manager wants to do within his budget and what he wants to do in his capital improvement plan.
So we have the capacity to do everything.
I agree with most of that. I think the thing it sounds like it's whether or not we need it, and mm-hmm. I think it's not that you don't need it. There is a need for the rate increase. It's just what's the right size of it. I mean, to say that, in my opinion, that there's no rate increase needed based on what we've got to do
right.
is not realistic.
Right, and I'm not saying that because you've got a certain amount up there.
Yeah.
But you got to keep that in mind, really, what that number is telling you.
Yeah.
and then where we need to go from here to come get you guys to do your work so that the board can do their work and the general manager can do his work.
But that's essentially why there is a process for doing that rate review every so many years, because you're going to hit it and assign a target, and then you're going to review it again at some point, because you're not going to hit those targets, because you're not going to have that detailed of a science of the numbers to really nail that exactly. Now, it'd be nice to be able to
forecast,
track that over time as we're doing this going forward, to see how good we are, and to be able to make some adjustments and assumptions based on that, because hopefully as we go through these rate studies going forward, we get better at them and we can show that we're doing better.
I pulled this up because I want to show you guys.
Stay right there. Just for
I want to explain this. This is from the rate study, and I just wanted to show that you guys have some understanding of what I'm saying. I think it's really good. Ken raising a point that the rates are not set for five. I mean, they're not based on 5 years of costs. They're not based on a five-year replacement plan. They're based on this schedule, capital replacement program, from the rate study, which goes beyond 5 years. It goes out trying to put in a schedule to replace everything we have when it needs to be replaced. And so I think this would help clarify what I mean when I say that. So I'm going to pick this one. It's just the top because it's the top.
Yeah.
And it's, so don't get hung up on it. It's markets and Dan Stubby Meadows. And I know first question is, well, don't you have a reserve fund set aside for yet? That? Yeah, we do. And that number in that fund is removed from, like, it's, even though the cost of this project is here, it's also that money in that fund is credited also. So it's on both sides, because $1 million wouldn't be enough to replace Mark Edson Dan if it ever had to be replaced. But I'm just picking this one. And this historic cost, not the total cost, it's the share that goes to whatever this system is. And it's probably a bad example, but it's at the top, so I'm just going to pick it. So don't get hung up too much in those numbers, please. But the point is, there's this column. So the year that it was built, acquired, whatever, there's the unit cost, historic, current, or future. So this is the cost whenever it was built, or the cost now, or the cost in the future. We don't know until we go to the next column over, H, C, or F, and that says, well, oh, that's the H, that's the historic cost. So in 1967, this thing was valued at $106,000, whatever this thing over here is. And I'm going to scroll over, so you're going to forget what that thing is, because I have more to go.
Yeah.
So not because I'm trying to hide it, but we have a lot more rows, columns to look at. So it was $106 at that point in time. So there we go, estimate historic cost. It's the same because that's an H. If over here, these are Cs, so historic cost is different than the current cost. But, and then we've got a normal estimated life. So that thing, whatever it is, that cost $106,000 in 1962, it should last 100 years. So right now it's 55 years old. Current age is 55 years old. Based on inflation, the spreadsheet calculates based on inflation, whatever that rate is. The cost replaced, if we had to replace it today, it'd be $315,993. Okay. And then you got 45 more years to go, planned remaining life. 100 minus 55 is 45. This yellow column here is, and all the yellow columns are stuff where we as staff or the consultant put numbers in, and the grays are calculated. So we said, well, we know it's only supposed to last 45 more years according to this 100-year life, but damn, we do such a great job maintaining that thing, it's going to last 50 years. And so 50 years, so in 50 years, it's going to cost $850,000 to replace it. Okay, that's a lot of money. We want to keep our rates reasonable, so we got to assume we're going to fund some with cash, some with grant, and some with loan. We picked numbers in here, and if we had to ever replace Stubby Meadows Dam, Marcus, there's no way we'd pay for that 100% by ourselves. We would have to get some grant, loan, something from somebody. There's got to be a grant program out there for something like that. I mean, if that dam failed, by gosh, there's going to be some FEMA money, or there's going to be something available we could get to help us with that. So we only need 10% cash to pay for that. The remaining, grants are really hard to get. Let's assume we're going to get 50% grant. 100% grant is like almost impossible to get. You know, if you're great, you'll get 80%. Well, we're going to say we're good, we're not great, we'll get 50%. And then we're going to fund the last 40% with a loan. And then this model goes through and allocates based on the existing reserve. So that spreadsheet I showed you guys earlier, that list of all those different funds, that allocated existing reserve funds towards all these projects in this giant list. And those of those monies we had set aside at the point in time this rate study was adopted, $12,000 of that would go towards this $850,000 liability. And then there's model goes through other calculations based on what is a loan cost. So that 40%, how much is that interest rates? Is it an SRF loan? You get 2.5%, 3%. What's the inflation? All that stuff goes into, for that one thing, you got to put aside $1,000 a year to replace it in 50 years. So if you want to have 10% cash to replace this thing in 50 years, plus enough to pay for your loan payments, you need $1,000 a year from your rates to pay for that. That's and so the model goes through that for every single thing listed in here, and it's really long. Yeah, go ahead.
What did they use to get to estimated future cost? 3%?
Just looks like it's about 2.
I don't know. It's listed in here somewhere. I don't remember. It's probably between 2 and 3%, Mitch. Yeah. Is it 2? Mitch says it's 2.
Yeah.
I believe Mitch.
Why isn't the existing reserves $1 million that fund the SMRF fund is $1 million?
That is a good question. I think he aggregated all of them and then allocated them all across. Again, I don't know the specifics of that project. But the I'm just if you add all these up, so it did do this for that one. Does that for every single one of those, adds them all up, and then at the bottom it calculates. So here, that's where this $1.5 million, that's where that 1544026 comes from, that goes into that model and the other pages I showed you. Now it's actually a little more than that because we haven't even looked at the irrigation side yet. That's a whole nother tab. This is treated water only, but I forgot how we got on with this, but that's that's the explanation of
kind
of
what I was
talking about. That's how we got to. So that's what came through. If you add all the things, that becomes $1.5 million a year that you need to be put aside. But it's not the fund to just the next projects I want to do in 5 years. It's you got to put money aside for things for the next, well, that quarter, that 50 years.
This is perfect because it gets down to that level of detail. Look, this is the amount of cash that we want to spend, not just on loans and all the other stuff. And you're essentially, it's like the envelope system. You're putting money in each of those different envelopes for each of these things. And you could almost argue that each of these should be a reserve fund on its own that you can track pretty carefully and see with our new accounting system. That would be something we could do. But it feels to me like, those are things where this is reserve money. You can then maybe bank on some investments to help grow that as well so that maybe you're not having to contribute as much from the ratepayers going forward as you start to build that. There's some interesting things, but this is exactly how I think it should be looking.
Correct, but don't forget too, Ken, that not only do we have this information and this is what the rate study was based on, and that rate study's for 5 years, but there's going to be 2 to 3 years going into that existing rate study and that we're going to start looking at doing another rate study, and then another rate study, and another rate study. So there's always going to be increases in rates and rate studies being done.
Not necessarily increases in rates every time.
Possibly not.
Yeah.
Possibly not. But you're going to do rate studies to take a look at do we need increase or not. Because one thing that, Stephen, correct me if I'm wrong, that the rate study did not calculate in this replacement was to set aside for catastrophic or emergencies. So there are things where we're always going to be looking at doing rate studies going forward for different projects at different times for different changes.
But and that's why you keep redoing the rate studies, because
correct.
If your assumptions were wrong and you made mistakes in this, that you can then course correct and you can say, well, you know what, we can bring the rates down. We can actually change the way we're doing the structure of it. Or you can start to say that, you know what, we're building this up, and that also can potentially be used as a catastrophic reserve as well. So it gives you that opportunity to keep adjusting course. You can't assume, I always used to, in corporate stuff, we would work on 3-year plans. 5-year plans is really kind of a bit of a stretch almost. But you just kind of keep reviewing it and making sure you're going down
correct.
The path.
But to bring us back full circle to where we are here, the main point I wanted to make and Steve's we're trying to make here too is to see, give you guys enough information at hand here, and give you enough information and backstory to understand that you scale all this back down to where we are now in coming up with the information that we have here based on Steve's budget and Steve's capital improvement program, his capital, his projects that he wants to get done, do we need a rate increase or not?
Well, so let me, right? I'm sorry, you guys are...
I
want to highlight one thing from this, okay, and then I want to get to the question of what reserves we're assuming in the rate study, but go ahead with your question first.
Well, can you run back to the Stumpy?
Yeah, wait, let me cover one thing first, and then I'll go back to Stumpy, because I'm afraid of getting details on Stumpy. But if you look, the other thing this tells us, if you look at it, is the highlighted numbers here. So it aggregates all the percentages of those different funding sources I ran through. So the first column is cash, and then this one was grants, and this was loans. So you can see, if you add up all the values of everything, 26% of everything is being funded with cash, 1% with grants, 73% with loans. So that is baked into your study, and that's where how you're funding things. So you're not collecting 100% of the value, you're collecting something else. And then this total here, the 135, 559, 165, that is a total cost to replace everything. I think that's today's dollars, if I remember right. So when I throw out numbers, and you'll hear me and probably Halpin, I think he was saying at the last meeting too, $156 million value of infrastructure, that's what that comes from. It comes from this study. There's 135 there, and then there's another chart like this just for the this is treated water share only. There's another chart like this for irrigation share. So you have to add them together or you don't get a true number. And if you add that on there, it's 156. So that's when we tell you, when we say things like, it's estimated future cost. So when we talk about what it would cost to replace, that's the replacement cost. $156 million to replace everything. So that's our liability.
Where people get concerned, I think, is that, you know, I like the envelope system and having these different buckets for everything like that. But the reality of it is that you're not going to have all these things happen at once. And so you've got, you know, this buffer that you're essentially maintaining so that you can cover all this stuff as time goes on over 50 years, so you're not having to kind of regroup. But it does feel, I think when people are looking at it, that we're accumulating way more reserves than we really potentially need. And that's where this kind of system needs to be explained in a little bit more detail in terms of how you're managing that stuff. And then you've got to kind of figure out, is it, you know, how you track over time. Again, it's that course correction stuff. It may end up that things, your maintenance is kicked butt, and we get a longer lifespan. We got to adjust those lifespans, or certain things maybe have a little bit longer lifespan. So,
Steve, your question.
It's complex.
I'm back at the top now.
Yeah, I see that. Thank you.
I was looking for it, and
I know this is an assumption, but if you assume that everything you've built into this turns out to be correct, wouldn't the cap on Stumpy Meadows be $850,524?
The cap meaning the future
cost. Once we've
got
that money set aside for Stumpy, we don't need to set aside any more until Stumpy needs it.
Let me see.
If it happened earlier,
you have to add in this other one. So that's what I was trying to explain. There's another.
We're at a million, right?
There's two spreadsheets. Well, wait. So there's two charts. That was just the treated water side. Now, remember we said there's an irrigation water side too, and these costs are allocated between those two. Customer classes, and they're allocated based on this case, because Mark Edson's Stumpy Meadows Reservoir is based on the volume of water.
Most of the water
is irrigation. So the irrigation side of this spreadsheet carries most of that cost. So here I rolled down. Oh, shoot.
But I hate that. When I page,
you have to add them up.
I thought 850 was cheap.
It is cheap.
You're saying
I got to roll back down. There's more money to add to that. Yeah. So okay. I can't. So, it's not 850. You got to add this number here.
1.15 million.
No, it's 3 million. I think.
Nice.
Okay. So I
got to roll over here.
I'm just looking at theory here, not necessarily the number.
So it's like four.
I'm just saying that if you add 3.199 to 850. Is that the cap?
Yeah, call it $4 million. If you think that's really the number.
So you had $4 million sooner, you don't need to collect any more.
Well, and not just that, too. It's that you've got a fund with cash of 10%, where you're, you know, already over 10%. We've got 25% allocated of that $4 million already, so why do you have 10% there? Is, you know, one of those things that you got to look at. So that's why I think it's important almost in the future to be tracking each of these as their own reserve things, so you know how much is in your reserve for that, and then you can calculate your fund with cash needs going forward based on how much you got in your reserve for each one of those things.
Cool. Okay.
And I might add another thing. If you had in your reserves an investment
for performing assets here, see, because the variable would be the inflation rate. So you'd have to assess that if we get a period of hyperinflation like we had. But then if you had your investment reserves allocated to a certain percentage that you could count on over time with a tiered laddered system, that would tend to offset any increases in inflation not accounted for here.
So. My guess is what they did was the existing reserves column, as you said, they spread it out on some percentage based on what we had, which probably included that $1 million.
Yeah.
So that's right. I think that reminds getting me of it down to a
you can look at these two
project-based,
you can look at these two and determine some amount of inflation, because your historic, particularly if it's a historic, if you look at your historic cost and then you look at your current cost, I mean, that's the inflation number right there. I mean, I thought I was going to have to replace it at the historic cost if I did it the day after it got completed. And now, if it's 10 years later, that money is much bigger to replace that particular thing. Mm-hmm. You can pretty much calculate.
Unless we didn't have to, they retrofit or modernize in that extra cost to, to build.
Yeah, sometimes so retrofitting and modernizing is cheaper.
So,
there's so many variables in trying to figure out future costs. You just have to pick a number. You got to kind of
coming up with a real number in 50 years is
The requirements for building could be totally different at that point. It's just you got to start somewhere.
But it's on this part that I want to.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm trying to go ahead because I think we're getting into the weeds now.
Back into a meeting minute, and George Saunders, before they did this rate study, stated that we could either do a cost of service study, which is current cost, or a future asset chart that were a concept that was future charges. So that's what they chose. They didn't do a cost of service study. And these aren't going into one pot, each pot. It's one pot.
Right.
Yeah. No lockbox. A lock. So.
Let me just go to this because the question was about the things that has been questioned about reserve funds and all that stuff. So, this is where I showed this earlier and go the.
So this still includes the list of the
this shows the
community service districts, right?
Yeah, some of the that are gone,
closed out.
But they've gone. They're in general fund now or reserves, wherever we put them. But this shows that these are the funds that were. They were allocated, aggregated up, and then spread out to different reserves and stuff. But there is an operating reserve here that he's saying assign this to operating, assign these to your emergencies. So, Gresser was talking about emergencies. He did kind of look at that and say, well, that's the Stumpy Meadows one, the $1 million. That's your emergency fund. So even if you don't earmark it for Stumpy, you should set that, maybe have that money set aside for emergencies. But there was nothing. Here it is. Here and here too. Emergency, emergency. But that was the assumptions he put into. So the capital reserve fund effectively functions as your emergency fund because you don't need it all in 1 year. Uh-oh. Okay. Speak. You can yell.
Steve. Yeah. Go ahead.
There's three of you.
Yeah. Go ahead. Anyway, we got Steve way three. Off down that hole, which is it's good. You guys need to understand this. So then this chart just shows revenue, actual revenue for 18-19 calendar year. This was presented this last time to you guys in that spreadsheet that Steve Miller had sent out for me to fill in. So if you add up 2018-2019 revenue, they're $6.3 million with the one-year rate freeze projection. So these revenues in here were the projections from the rate study. The rate study projected your water revenue would be $3,155,876 for the first year. And then, well, I guess I should start with it. And then if you freeze it 1 year, it's the same again, right? And so 6,311,752. So that's comparison between your actuals and your projected with the 1 year freeze. And then here was the adopted one. So if you hadn't frozen it,
then
it'd be 6.5 million.
For clarification, okay,
yes.
So did I hear you right? That
I don't know.
The 3.155 was the amount, the rate amount based on the rate study?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the amount.
So it says 1 year rate freeze as a header, so that's
the adopted,
not a rate freeze.
No, it is. Well, 2019 it is. So because this number is the same here. That's a 1 year rate freeze. So this was the first year, and then this is the second year, and we froze it.
for the adopted is on the right, and so essentially you're
correct. Adopted on the right. Two. So for year one, for 1 year freeze,
The difference is the 200.
You had 6.5 million would have been adopted, and 6.3 million actual and projected.
But 150,000 of it was right here.
I'm not sure what you're saying.
Well, you had actual revenue in 18 of 3.2 million.
Yeah.
And you had actual revenue in 19 of 3 million. 3.1 million if you want to.
Yeah.
Roughly 150.
Yeah.
Which accounts for 150 of that shortfall.
No, but you can't look at it that way. Because these rates weren't adopted. You can't compare that to $3.3 million. That is not the rate that was implemented. The rate that's implemented is 3.155.
Okay.
You got to compare the first two columns.
Well, that's what I'm looking at.
Yeah, I mean, if you add them up, they're 6.3 and 6.3.
Well, you had
this revenue was over, right? That revenue exceeded.
But you had the same.
The first year revenue exceeded the projections of the rate study by 70 million, and the second year.
70,000,
I'm sorry. 70,000, right? 70, yeah. And then the second year, you were under the rate study projections by 70,000.
Right? So the actuals 80? Were at 6.3 total.
6.3 for 2 years.
With the one rate freeze plan.
You would have been at 6.3. Projections were 6.3.
Were just under 10 grand.
10 grand, yeah.
And then the adopted rates, though, were, 300 grand under the adopted rates.
200.
210.
Yeah.
Okay, this is calendar, not fiscal.
This is calendar. Because the rates were adopted on the calendar.
But I guess my question is, if you hadn't frozen it and you'd gone to the adopted rates, because we don't know what happened here, it's liable to happen again.
It would definitely go up.
Didn't change the rates at all, but it went down.
Right. Usage.
That
usage.
Was the question.
So
that
usage goes down.
Conservation. People drop their miners.
Could be weather.
That was why weather. I was saying we need to know kind of what that was.
Yeah. So let's keep going.
What kind of increase we want.
Yeah. So this is an overview. I think we can get more detail later on this. I think there's more information here. So the point of these was just to show the impact of the freeze. Really was that. It's $200,000 a year, for 1 year, but it's $200,000 for each year, and that's the point I was trying to make last time. I think at the end, maybe I thought I made it. I thought you guys had got it, but then at the end, it was pretty clear that Ken and I weren't talking the same language. I pick him out because I remember him saying something about it, and I think I brought it clear for him at the end is that it's $200,000 each year. So the impact of a 1 year of you freezing the first year was $800,000. That's what this column shows. If you freeze for 1 year, you lose $880,000. Now, I know some folks object to my language of saying lose. It's the comparison to what was adopted in the rate structure. Yeah. Now, obviously, it's all dependent on how much water people actually consume. But that's if all I have to compare it to is what was in the rate study at this point, because it's all future. So $880,000 for 1 year freeze, $1.5 million for 2 year threes. If you freeze it for 3 years, it's $2 million. And if you freeze it for 4 years, it's $2.2 million. So every time you do it, it's $200,000 per year that's left on the schedule as compared to the rate study.
How does the first year get $800,000?
$200,000 per year for 4 years.
Oh, that you're projecting.
200 times 4, yeah.
Projecting.
I'm projecting, yeah. Well, it's a guarantee you're going to lose because you can't, and the reason is you can't catch up. You don't. If you don't freeze it for 1 year, you can't do 2 years of increases the next year. So effectively, you've cut your rate study short by a year, or not. And that's where we were getting confused last time. I think I said that it was confusing, but you can't jump a year. You're stuck to 5% and 10% per year, and we finished that last time. But I wanted to show it again. This is just a graphical way of showing the same thing. So,
but Steve, you bring up a good point, because what that means going forward for the district. Is that next time they do a rate study, those potential losses could mean that we jump up again, possibly a little bit higher to make up, depending on the projects that you have prioritized, the ones you want to get done in a certain amount of time, the cost of the materials, the cost of the labor. Mm-hmm. So That's always going to be a challenge going forward.
Yeah, if you follow the same kind of rate study methodology that has been used this time, then yeah, absolutely, you will have to catch up at some point.
So essentially, at this point, the 1 year has been committed to.
Yep.
It's now if we go down the second year and we do a full year of it, then we've based on projections, we've got that shortfall of 1.5. Now, whether or not we're actually going to need to spend up against it, that's not necessarily the story here, because we're talking about building up capital reserves to be able to deal with future projects. So it's not that we're going to be able to run the district, it's making sure that we can continue to run it for longevity.
Correct. Yeah. Steve, can you go back to this for a second? You're right. So let's say, for example, we froze those rates, right? We froze those rates in 2018 for not more than 12 months. Depending on what the board decides to do again here, we could either save this amount or we could increase it. But what that means going forward then, if you take that information out to the public, because you think you're going to have to start in the next year, I guess it should go down then, to 2020, in the next year, you think you should go out and start doing another rate study and looking at taking information back out to the public, to the customers and the voters, see, hey, are we going to be able to do this? Can we afford it? This is what we want to do. These are priority projects that need to be done in a short amount of time. This information is what's vital to take out and to consider going forward for a rate study, not what we've lost.
Well,
because the community is not going to care about this. They're going to care about what it's going to cost them now and what it's going to cost them in that year when that new rate increase, or whatever year the new rate increase takes effect once you get it all done.
Can I get clarification on one thing there real quick? Steve, maybe the logistics of this, but my understanding, and I was wrong last time, is that rate study covers what we're doing to 2022, and that's essentially set. If we do another rate study, that's going to then take an effect 2023.
For five more years.
So you can't really change what's going to happen in 2021.
Yeah.
That's set. It's unless the district and the board decides to keep it frozen for 5 years, which would be essentially violating what the rate study was doing. So,
which could be. It could be. It depends on who the board is and what they decide. Or they could go forward and raise it, and then you get more conservation, so you lose revenue again.
Yeah.
So the point I'm just trying to make is, when you take information back out to the public, this is what we're going to be basing it on, not what we've lost.
Absolutely, you're going to base on.
They're not going to care what we've lost. They're going to care what it's going to cost them forward.
You're going to have to keep showing what our reserves are, and that's the story: is do we have the reserves to execute against what we think we're going to need to be doing?
Correct, but your reserves aren't going to be based on your lost revenue. So
no, but this
puts things in perspective for us.
But the reserves are projected based on this revenue, and
exactly.
So if your revenue is not meeting your projections, then your reserves are not going to meet your projections.
And you may have
that's
the story
the
to the public,
so,
saying that here's our new rate study, and we've got this work that we have to do, and our reserves aren't going to cut it. And by the way, had we been contributing to our reserves for the last few years, we might have been in better shape and you wouldn't have to do an increase now. So, that's the story. Mm-hmm. And, I think the key thing is that we are doing another rate study, and it's not going to go into effect until 2023. So we need to figure out what needs to be done between now and then. That's essentially what this is all about.
Okay. Sorry, can I go on?
Yeah, please.
That says the same thing. Near-term impacts, I presented this report too. Like, if you freeze them now, it's 6 months impact to the 1920 budget revenues. So that's $112,000, basically, under projections. And then long-term, we talked a little about this last time too. In addition to the revenue reduction for calendar years, what happens just in terms of projects is you end up having to delay planned capital projects. So if you go for a year, for sure my CIP is going to look different that I bring back to the board in March or May, whenever we do that. It'd be May, I guess. My recommendations, I keep getting pushed on this. Well, what are you going to do? What's your CIP going to look like? Well, I don't really know until you tell me what you're going to do with the revenue, and then I can tell you what my recommendations would be for projects. My recommendations would be to delay these two projects. I delay a treated waterline replacement program. and I delayed an upcountry ditch rehab program. Those things are both critically important, I think, and very needed. But when you compare them to recoating tanks, and you compare them to, which, you know, tanks are expensive and you want to keep them maintained and as long as, give them as long as lifespan as you can. When you compare it to that, I'd say I would do tank recoatings first. And this stuff, I would just cross my fingers and hope they last a little bit longer.
So, Steve, why would you delay those projects if the board already approved the money and the money's already in the reserves for them?
Because you, because the revenue reduction...
Are you talking about possibly the upcountry ditch rehabilitation, the grant program?
Because right here.
That's the grant.
I'm going to lose. No, this is the revenue reduction of another year, another freeze. So if you freeze, if rates get frozen for another year, that reduces the CIP available money by $658,000. And so
the difference looks like it was, I thought you said it was $224,000 based on your...
Yeah, let's go back.
For 220...
For 1 year, but like I was trying to...
For 210, so for... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, fine.
So for 220, if we freeze the rates again, we're going to look at losing another $224,000. So if the monies have already been allocated and moved around to do the two projects that the board has approved to be done, why would those be delayed?
I
just want to get clarification on that one slide you have.
Yeah, let's. Well, I'm going to go back to this one because it's not just $200,000. So again, it's $200,000 per year. So the impact of a two-year rate freeze, as compared to the revenue projections that we have, which are based on the rates today, but that's the whole CIP is based, the 5-year capital improvement plan is based on the revenues that were projected by the rate study. And so, because that's the only 5-year revenue projections I have. So we use those, and you compare those to what the new rates would be after they've been frozen for 2 years, and then the shortfall is $1.5 million. So I got to take that money, that revenue, out of my 5-year capital improvement plan. I have $1.5 million less to spend on projects. Board's going to ask me, well, Steve, your 5-year plan has this. These projects are not planned in 1920. There's no money this year for those projects.
Right. I think there were 2021.
Next year, 2021 will be the first year we have money for those projects. So I'm going to tell you, we'll have $1.5 million less than over the next 5 years to plan. So I'm going to have to delay projects if we're going to deliver them. And the board can tell me, you know, Steve, we want you to do those two, but there has to be a trade-off somewhere because I have $1.5 million less revenue to spend. So some other project has to get delayed in the 5-year plan. And delay would be out past, you know, year three, and assuming a new rate study gets done. And that's what I would push them out to year three because that's when the new rates would go into effect.
The actuals were higher than...
That all gets adjusted. I was talking to somebody the other day, and I was telling them we do a 5-year CIP every year, and they're like, what? It's a 5-year plan. Why do it every year?
Yeah.
I said, because you have to adjust for these things. The revenues come in differently. Your expenditures are different, and so I want to update it every year. I know places that don't, but I will always bring to you a new one every year, always advocate for it, because revenues change, expenses change, and I want to, like Ken was just saying, that target, even a 5-year target, is hard to hit. And so I want to adjust my path, my trajectory each time to make sure I'm on target. So that's why it's, and there's probably slides on that too later. I don't remember.
So when will we get from projections to actual numbers?
Yeah.
Here we go. Right there. Is that what you're looking for?
I'm still looking for
operating
I'm
revenues.
Still looking for the actual fiscal year 18-19 budget with actual numbers in it.
Right here. So there's 18-19 actual for sales. 18-19 budget for sales, water operating revenues, $3.2 million, 3,212,300. 18-19 actuals, $3 million. This is right from the LSL audit, so the audit that was presented to the board last month. The 18-19 actual revenues are in there. $3,196,739 is the actual water operating revenue.
So if you go back and you look at the actual fiscal year numbers from 17-18, and you compare that to the audit, they don't match up.
17-18?
So if you go back and you look at the fiscal year audit for 18-19, I'm looking for the actuals so I can match it up with the budget, with the audit.
I'm so confused because you just said fiscal year 17-18. Mm-hmm. Are you talking about 17, 18, or 18, 19?
If you go back and you look at the actuals that you, the last actual budget that you released that you gave to us is 17, 18. You haven't given.
Why? That's two fiscal years ago. I'm so confused. Why are we talking about 17, 18 right now? I'm totally confused.
Because the point is, I'm still waiting on the entire actual fiscal year 18, 19 budget with the actual numbers in it so they can compare it to other previous budgets, previous audits, and this audit. Because when I looked at fiscal year audit, when I looked at the audit compared to the fiscal year actual budget numbers for 17, 18, they did not match up.
But we're not, I don't understand, we're not talking about, the board has already acted on the fiscal year 17, 18 budget and audit.
Wait, let me finish. So the point is, until I actually get a chance to look at your actual fiscal year budget for 18, 19, and compare that to the audit, I want to make sure that you're telling me that these are from the LSL audit.
They are.
Well, when I did the comparison a year before, those numbers didn't match up.
On the revenues?
So my doubt coming forward is I'm not sure these are going to match up with your actual. So I'm still waiting to see.
I would love to sit down with you and go through the 17, 18 numbers so we can talk about why you think they don't match up.
And I'm still waiting for you to produce the actual budget.
I have never been requested
19.
For 17, 18 actual budget numbers from you. I presented. You have them. Do you not have them?
No.
You have 17, 18 actuals.
Well, 17, 18.
That's what she's talking about.
19. Well, she's also talking about.
You guys are so confused on this, and you won't let me explain it.
So the point is, when you do a previous year comparison side by side to your actual budget with the audit, the numbers don't match up.
That's not true.
They're off a bit.
Yeah.
I think others, we've looked at this too, and we've seen that. So going forward, I'd like to see the fiscal year 18-19 actual budget. We've asked for this since December.
So if you let me go through the slides that are in here.
And so I'm still waiting on it.
If you let me go through the slides that are in here.
LSL, because it makes me wonder. I'd like to take a look at what's behind.
Because you're accusing me of something that's fraud, and you don't understand.
No, Steve,
and you're
not
giving me a chance to explain it.
I'm not.
If you wait
you
for the
fraud.
Board meeting on the next week, we'll go over the 18-19 budget actuals, and you'll see everything. And you'll understand it. And if you let me go through the slides here, you'll understand it. But instead of letting me present it, you're just going to argue with me and try and make me look bad in front of everybody.
No, that's not what I'm
That's exactly what you're trying to do. Because if
I'm
you didn't, you would ask these questions ahead of time.
And what I'm doing, what I'd like to do
right.
going forward, and I'm just waiting.
And
for
this is not a board meeting, and you're involving in discussions with the committee and taking up the committee's time. And I would like to go through the slides and present the information, and then see if there's questions.
Okay.
All that aside, if you continue to lose revenue by virtue of rate increase, or even if you hold steady with revenue, but you don't grow revenue like you anticipate, then all those numbers are going to be affected, correct? So are we assuming that the consumer is going to follow, you know, your customer number, your consumption number, and all the rest of it is going to be more or less maintained, going through with a little bit more charge to each of those people? And if those people start dropping off, it just negatively impacts the numbers, right?
Yeah. If your usage goes down, your revenue goes down, no doubt.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then if the governor invokes his 55 gallon a day for household,
So here's the 18-19 budget numbers. Here's the actual numbers from 18-19 from the LSL audit. The spreadsheet I gave to Steve Miller and the committee last time has the actual numbers from our accounting system, and they match. I don't know if it's on the slide in here or not, but it probably is because it's in the packet for sure. If you look at the spreadsheet I put up on the board last time that Steve asked me to fill out for him, and you add up the water sales, they match these numbers here from the audit.
This one in the back?
Yep.
Yeah, but it doesn't have toasts.
Why don't you finish?
I'm trying.
Yeah.
I'm really trying. So there's your 18-19 actuals, slightly under than what was budgeted, to a tune of, looks like, $16,000. There's the 19-20 budget, and I just threw in the 19-20 year-to-dates just to see if they were tracking relatively the same. There are some footnotes here I want to make sure everyone's aware of. These are net of adjustments. So these include adjustments, including irrigation water service disruption credits. So if the our ordinance says that if people are out of service for more 5 days or more, that they get a credit, they can get a credit back for that loss of usage. So this includes those credits that go back to people. We also have a low-income rate assistance program for folks. So these credits, this is net of those, so that revenue has been deducted from here too. The board set aside $35,000 for that program. I think we're like around half of that, $17,000 or so, that we're actually seeing per year. So that reduces the revenues here as well. And any leakage adjustments. So as the committee knows, a couple of times ago, we brought to you guys a leakage adjustment policy. And so that this is net of any leakage adjustments as well. I've also excluded the supplemental charge for the ALT loan and any connection fees. So the ALT loan and the connection fees are restricted, and so they go to separate funds. And my year-to-date is as of December 31st, 2019. A couple other footnotes over here in 1920, because you'll see that commercial goes away. Because for the 1920 budget and moving forward, I've been working to try and combine treated water sales that are into one category. Because of Prop 218, we can't charge commercial different than residential. It has to be based on something that's measurable. So it's based on meter size. So residential commercial, it doesn't mean anything from a Prop 218 revenue standpoint. I suppose from a policy standpoint, it does, but you can't charge them different rates. So at one point in time, the district was charging different rates for those. So I'm trying to combine them. So you'll see that's why treated water sales residential goes from 2.4 to 2.9. It's because I'm combining the commercial. The little bit here that's left in commercial are the construction water meters. So we do rent out hydrant meters people can use for construction water, and then we charge them by unit for that usage. So that still stays under commercial. So if you wanted to look at it, you can see, 6 months in, we're pretty close to half on everything. Yeah.
So my question is, can we use that year-to-date information, 1920, to extrapolate through the full year? In other words, we have 6 months of information. Can we simply double that $1.8 million and come up with a year-end?
I think you'd be close. I mean, you got... Right, because it covers the same amount of... The thing to worry about is the season, right? Because people use more water. But I think you're covered, because if you start in July, and then you got July, August, you got 2 months, and then you got... I mean...
Right, okay, what I'm getting to ultimately is that 1920, we have a budgeted number of $3.4 million. I'm rounding here,
yeah,
obviously. Yeah. And if we double the 1.8, we add 3.6, so we have $200,000
I have to look at that, you know... I didn't really think about that, so I have to think about that.
Irrigation.
Because you got irrigation, right? Irrigation is 5 months, and so it's May, June, July. So that's not evenly split. I don't know.
What I would like to see from my standpoint is a projection from you for the remainder of the fiscal year, because just looking at it as the way I've done in a simplistic form leads me to a conclusion that says we're
headed
fat.
Over. So did you look at the spreadsheet I gave you guys last time with the you actually had how much water we sold by month? I mean, you could take that and that might be a better way to do it, because you could take that and add and just copy months from the same month from last year to future and see if it That would accommodate any fluctuation in the usage due to temperature, because that's the thing. It's like right now, this has been a horribly dry month, and so I think people's landscape usage might start going up if we don't see some more rain. I don't know, I'm just guessing, because we don't have we haven't had the rain.
Well, everybody was complaining of high bills this last
time. I don't know.
That was why when we talked last time, we talked about a monthly number. Because I think that gives you, I would, if I was just guessing, and it's because I have landscaping, I use a lot more water in the second semester than I do in the first, because I've got July, August, and September that are hot months, and in the spring I have half of May and June. So my consumption goes up. I mean, in June, it's pretty close to July, but you know, in August it's not close to May, and in September it's definitely not close to April. So my guess would be that if I doubled that number, I'd probably be overstating what I would anticipate by some amount, but I couldn't tell you what amount, because that would be what I would look at from monthlies all the way back and say, you know, okay, here's the scale. If I apply that scale, here's the projection. If this is a projection, that's good. But the other thing you have, again, you always going to have to look and see what the consumer can bear, because, you know, eventually they get to the point where they can't bear it anymore, and then they just go away, and then the revenue starts doing this. And I notice that if I look at the sales in